This is the Freedom Fiends Podcast, season 5, day 2A, a mile above sea level at the Galactic Prairie Studios. We woke this release by warping your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a, I got 365 problems, but the temperature ain't one of them, to keep a soon flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working night? Can you feel it?
I can feel it all through my body.
And this is Lou, and I am joined by our young junior co-host who's on, like, work permit from the school system, Knight Constantino. So,
yes, sir.
Welcome aboard, Knight. Would you knock it off with that sir stuff? I'm going to take you over my knee and show you, you know, how to behave yourself. So, anyway. I know you were raised properly and everything, but I'm not really ready to be old enough to be called Sir constantly. I mean, you can pull that stuff with Randy. He actually is old and has a lot more gray hair than I do. So welcome to the show, Knight. So you are engaging in an endeavor that is probably not as common to folks your age as it was in my generation. You're doing something that many millennials are just really scared to death of doing. It's something that they avoid like the plague. Tell us what that is.
Scrambling for a job. I was working at McDonald's for about a month maybe two, but my friend hired like six or seven people to where, you know, I would only work like 2 days out of the week and only work 4 hour shifts, which is like no money. So I quit, and now I've been applying to so many places, but I just haven't gotten a call back, and it sucks because I really like money, and
don't we all?
And I would like to have some money.
Okay, so all right, well, let's talk a little bit about this whole job search thing. A quick question with the working at McDonald's, and incidentally, that was one of my first jobs too. I worked at McDonald's when I was, I believe, 16. Just got my first car and everything else, and I was working at McDonald's. It was a part time gig, you know, the 20 some hours a week during the school year and everything. I don't know what they do now for summertime break for 16-year-olds, if they bump you up to like 30 or 40 hours. Apparently at the place that you worked at, they don't. So let's go with the value life lesson here. One is called never jump ship without a life raft. Are you familiar with this one?
I'm not familiar with it, but I do have an idea of what it means.
Okay, what does it mean, Knight?
I'm pretty sure it just means, you know, make sure that you always have a job before you quit the one you're working at currently.
Yes, that is correct. I can't count how many times I've seen people do this. I've done this a time or two myself. You get PO'd at the boss and you rage quit and you just, you know, I'm out of here. I'll go somewhere else, and come to find out that you haven't found somewhere else yet, because you don't have something lined up. You don't even have anything any irons in the fire yet. So I guess one of the important lessons with that is make sure that you have a plan before you go doing stuff. So anyway, you can't unring that bell. A couple quick questions. You said that you're getting about, what, 8-10 hours a week at Mickey D's?
Yeah.
Okay. Were you actually turning a profit on that? Meaning, were you spending more on gas than you were bringing in?
I don't really, I don't have a car to go there. My mom drives me. But with taxes and everything, and I would only get like maybe $80. And usually, you know, $80 would be what I spent on, you know, myself. Because before those six or seven people were hired, you know, I would get like maybe $2.50 a check, and I'd save you know, at least $150. But I don't know, man. The $80 was just me, but I want money saved up, and I felt like I wasn't gonna get that. because I still need to be a kid. You know, I still need to have money to spend.
Yeah, drugs don't buy themselves.
I do not do that.
Of course you don't. So were you making better money at McDonald's, and then when they hired additional people, they cut the hours? Is that the case, or did you have another job prior to McDonald's?
I had two other jobs prior to McDonald's. I worked at this place called the Kima Boardwalk. It's basically like Six Flags, but just worse. And it was horrible. I worked the little mini games, and I just did not like it. It was really bad. I got minimum wage, and they only let you work on the weekends. It just sucked. And then I worked at Cane's for about 3 months, and they gave me about the same hours that McDonald's did when they hired a bunch of people. My plan was I was going to stay at McDonald's for the benefits that they provide. You know, I was going to stay there, but then all those people got hired and no one was making money. So
now here's something to consider for future reference. In a situation like that, where you'll have places like McDonald's and not just McDonald's, there's a number of places out there that will do this. They will go and hire a bunch of people all at one time. And the expectation is that most of them are not going to stick around. What's the old phrase that we used to use? Hire in masses and then fire their butts, or watch them disappear. Because you're gonna have probably a majority of them are not going to pan out. They're gonna want to go do something else, or they'll say, "Well, you know what? I thought I wanted a job. I just really wanted a paycheck," and they don't want to do the work to get the paycheck. So they have a tendency to weed themselves out fairly quickly, and there'll probably be a couple that get fired for being dumb. But anyway, in a situation like that, you're probably not looking at having all that competition for a long time. Now, how long it would take, I really don't know. And if at the end of that little experiment and hiring a bunch of derelicts, they might realize, you know, hey, you know, this guy Knight, he's a good guy, he's a hard worker, rather than jerking his chain, perhaps we should have him work a few more hours because he's reliable. So I think one of the lessons, and a lot of people don't get this, it's not just the youngsters, the millennials. This is something that a lot of people really don't understand. And Jeffrey Tucker has written numerous articles about what it is to be a good employee and to be valuable. And quite frankly, it's like it's a lost concept or lost idea. People, they just don't really, they don't understand that an employer, when they purchase somebody's labor, they're looking with the same eyes that the regular consumer has when he purchases something else, you know, purchases an actual product. Or another way of looking at it is a lot of these people that are slackers on the job, when it comes time to hire somebody to do some work for them, they're the ones that they're standing over the person's shoulder, making sure that the person doesn't scratch their butt too many times, because then they're gold bricking. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I was a very reliable employee. I mean, I got a lot of calls up to the store talking about how efficient I was and how much I cared for the customer, because I really do. I would tell them to have a blessed day, you know, and I really meant that. And that was a huge part of why I enjoyed it, was making sure that the customer felt happy. But I was asking for full time, like a lot, you know, I did ask for it a little bit too much, and I don't know, maybe they got annoyed with me and just didn't give me more hours.
That's an interesting idea. So I don't really know if asking for more hours would be that annoying. I do know that many of these places try to stay away from the full time because of like the Obamacare requirements and things like that. So, and it could be It could be that you annoyed them. It could be that you, I don't know, maybe they just want to keep everybody in the part-time range to where they don't have to do the benefits. My understanding is that one of the Obamacare requirements was that anybody that worked, I think it was 29 hours or more than 29 hours, was considered full-time. Therefore, there were a bunch of 28 and 29-hour maximum hour jobs that were created from it. So, but anyway, well, let me ask you this. All right, you said that you got good compliments from the customers, which is always a good thing. What is it that you think made you made you valuable as an employee to the company and to that particular?
Well, I mean, getting positive feedback. In our little break room, we would have this little printout of website feedback, and there were multiple comments of how efficiently I ran the drive-through. And a lot of times I would have to take both lanes. I don't know if at the McDonald's where you're at, they have two lanes, but ours did. And most of the time my coworkers were lazy and I had to pick up the slack. But at the same time, I was also taking customers' money. And I'm a really good multitasker. So I could be having a conversation with the customer outside my window and a customer that just pulled up at the drive-thru.
Nice.
And yeah, I mean, it was a really fun job. I enjoy just looking like a genius.
Okay. So if all this stuff is true, then, and you can answer this when we come back from the break, why do you think that they were not appreciative? But anyway, we'll be back and you can answer that. Worms.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
I love The Freedom Fiends, but in this modern busy world, I just don't have time to listen all the way through every episode.
There is a solution. Go to the World Wide Web and log on to digest.freedomfiends.com and subscribe to the Freedom Fiends Digest. Digest.freedomfiends.com has 20-minute best-ofs of each episode.
20-minute best-ofs? Digest.freedomfiends.com sounds great. How much does it cost?
That's the best part. It's free. And if you listen at 1.5 speed, they're only 13 minutes long. Plus, the episodes are only about 15 megs, which is great, because I have a limited data plan.
Wow. I'm at digest.freedomfiends.com right now. It's so simple to use. And anyone who doesn't have 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends is a big old statist.
I agree with you about people who can't find 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends Digest. That's digest.freedomfiends.com.
Loon, I'm joined by Knight Constantino, and unfortunately Lisa was not able to be here tonight because she had computer problems. Her computer like totally melted down. So young Knight and I will be flying without her, and so anyway, going back to our conversation from the very first segment, and I left with a question. What do you think it is, if you were providing all this great service at for your employer, why do you think it is that they did not appreciate what you had to offer?
Because what I think it is that the big companies see people as expendable, you know? If I leave, someone else is definitely going to want to, you know, come back and take my job, even if it's, you know, just for a few hours. And there's other people that, you know, could do what I did. So I think that's why they never really showed much appreciation. I had one manager come up and pull me to the side and tell me, like, how much she appreciated me because I ran the drive-thru so smoothly and I made her job easier. But I didn't really get that from another manager, and we had like maybe six or seven there.
Okay. Well, one of the things is when you are dealing with a big corporation, is true that you're going to just be another number, another dot in the ant farm to the people at the corporate headquarters. But generally, when you're in that particular store, the managers that you deal with, even if you don't work for them directly, they are going to notice what you do. And you just hit one of the big things is you made the manager's job easier by not being a screw up.
Yeah. I mean, whenever I showed up, I knew that it was time to work, and I tried my hardest every minute I was there.
Okay. Well, if you maintain a work ethic like that, you'll probably be fairly successful. And at the very least, you're bound to find an employer that appreciates it. And to be honest with you, it's not just big corporations that see people as replaceable, because for the most part, everybody's replaceable. It kind of goes into this whole great man theory of, the place is going to fall apart without so-and-so. Well, it might not work as smoothly as it did. It might take a little while to get a new groove going on. But when a person leaves, if one person is the reason that a place is staying afloat, then the place probably doesn't deserve to be afloat. So bottom line is everybody's replaceable. Just,
yeah, I mean, I definitely understand that point of view.
Yeah, the question is how easily can you be replaced? So anyway, let's move forward. So you're on the job search right now. What is your plan for finding employment?
Being persistent. I mean, it was easy for me to find a first, second, and a third job, but I feel like this fourth job is the hardest job search because I have more history to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And I never worked at these places for that long. 3 months, and then 1 month at Kima, and then 1 month at McDonald's. So maybe that's why I'm not getting the call back. I'm trying to go back to Cane's and work at this drive-in place, Sonic. But I haven't gotten a call back. I don't even know if they've looked at my application. So, yeah, I mean, I'm trying to look for jobs in this area.
Okay. So let's take a look at your plan here. There's some basic things that you need to know for the job search. One is, and I remember when I was getting out of the Army, they had this transition training where they taught us how to do resumes and everything, and we would type out the resume on the typewriter. No, actually, we had early computers at the time. But the guy was explaining, says, here's the secret to finding a job. Bubba gets the job. And what he's talking about is the good old boy network. And you can go out and you can apply for a number of different positions, and you'll get a couple of interviews, you'll get a couple of offers. But ultimately what it comes down to is when an employer is looking to hire somebody, they will generally go to referrals of people that work there. So if you have friends that work at these different places or connections or contacts or something like that, reach out to them. Have them put in a good word for you, because that's how you're going to get your foot in the door. We'll talk more about this when we come back from this trip to the market.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Now.
Woof. Freedom Fiends. This is Lou, and I'm joined by Knight. We're talking about how to get a job. So before we went to break, I was talking about the good old boy network. Bubba gets a job. So the advice that I have for you, Knight, is is if you know people that work at these places, maybe they're friends, family members, connections, acquaintances, strangers that you have spoken to, talk to them, because they're probably going to be your ticket in the door, and it, at the very least for an interview. Now, other things to consider, under the best of circumstances, if you're out looking for work and you put out 10 applications, statistically you can expect to get one call for an interview off of every 10 applications. Now you might put 20 out and not get any calls, and then you get two calls for like number 21 and 22. But anyway, you could basically expect an average of one out of 10, and that's under good circumstances. If the economy is a little bit tighter and companies are not hiring as much, then they're going to be a lot more selective in who they call, because quite frankly, HR people are not looking to practice. They don't need to interview a bunch of people so that they can get good at it. Chances are they've probably been doing it for a while. So make sure that you are pounding the pavement and you're getting a lot of good applications out there. And I use the word good applications for a reason. One of the biggest complaints of HR folks is that they get a bunch of unqualified applicants. Now, fortunately, in the days of modern technology and scanning programs, they can eliminate people with their applications and resumes by if they don't check the appropriate education requirement levels, then they'll get booted out. If they don't have the right language in their resume, and yes, they do use scanning programs to look for specific buzzwords, if that's not in there, they'll get booted out. So make sure that you are applying for jobs that you are qualified for. Do not waste the HR person's time. So when it comes to a resume, do you have a resume put together?
Yes, I do.
Okay, and where do you have it posted online? Are you with Indeed, Monster? What places are you posted?
I just made it in school off this website, Naviance.
Okay, but do you have it posted on a job search website like an Indeed.com?
Oh, no, I don't.
Okay, that is probably one of the best things to do, because that way you're going to be putting your advertisement out there. And the thing about a resume is it is an advertisement, and you are the product. So what it's going to do is it's going to give a brief little overview. It's going to give a brief little sales pitch of why the HR person should give you a call and set up an interview with you. Now, the key thing to remember is a resume does not get you a job. It's only designed to get you the interview. So the interview is where you're going to get the job. So have you made a list of your marketable skills, the things that you can do, you know, the work that you can sell to potential employers?
I really go in and I just say like, I'm a hard worker. I show up on time.
Well, everybody says that. Nobody's going to say, you know what, I'm a half-assed worker and I'll be here like 50% of the time. That doesn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think what I should say from now on is, you know, I'm a very, very skilled multitasker, and I make everyone's job easier.
Okay, good. Good, because that's something that the average person is not going to say. I mean, the average person, when they go in an interview, and trust me, I've interviewed enough people, everybody says, I'm a hard worker, or I'm a people person, or I'm always on time, you know, whatever. And it's you can really just take that with a grain of salt, because everybody says that. And quite frankly, enough of the people that have said it have proven themselves to be liars, to where I suspect that most people that say it are going to be liars too. So I don't know. Maybe I'm just judging everybody harshly, but they have a tendency to prove themselves to be scumbags in a lot of situations. But anyway, it's good that you're using that language and saying that you make people's jobs easier. How do you explain in the interview how you make a boss's job easier?
I think I just give examples from my past job, how I pick up slack and I don't complain about it. What happens, happens, and I'm happy to pick up extra work and prove myself to my bosses even more.
Okay, good, good. Now, something else, when you're doing a resume and you're putting down your experience, and incidentally, the top one third of the first page of a resume, top half of it, is the only thing that's going to get any real scrutiny. That's the only thing that an HR person is really going to look at, and anything beyond that is going to be just skimming. But they will be looking for mistakes, and when you're skimming, it is easy to find mistakes. But make sure that when you have your objective, and the objective is where you're talking about the job that you're looking to get. It's a job that you're applying for. So if you haven't stated that by the end of your objective and they don't know what you're applying for, you've done it wrong. So. And then also the summary of qualifications or highlights of qualifications. Make sure that you're targeting your resume for the position that you're applying for and that the information in there is relevant to the position. So when it comes to doing explaining your experience, both in the resume and in the interview, it's good to not just tell what you did, but also to tell how well you did it. So can you qualify and quantify your accomplishments? And by quantify and qualify, I would ask, as a cashier doing the drive-thru at Mickey D's, how often was your drawer count off?
It was only under once, and that was when I was on break, and someone else was still signed in on my till. But most of the time, my till was over because a lot of customers, they would leave their change.
Okay. All right. But the bottom line is you had accuracy.
Yes.
Okay. So if you can say that 99% of the time you had accurate money counts, what you're doing is you're putting a qualifier there on your accomplishment. You're showing how well you did it. So anybody can say, yeah, I worked the register. And the question is, well, how accurate were you? Oh, heck, I don't know. I got it right sometimes. So make sure that you're qualifying your accomplishments. So, any questions on any of this so far? Are you writing down notes, or are you just gonna like go back tomorrow and listen to the show?
I'm gonna go back tomorrow and listen to the show. I usually go back.
Okay. Yeah. I don't need you scribble notes, because if I ask you a question, you're like, hang on, let me finish this out. It's not gonna be very good radio. So, all right. Making sure that you list your experience. What else is out there? Is there anything that I haven't covered, or anything that you would want to know about?
Man, it's just, I don't even know if the places I've applied to have actually even looked at my application.
You go. So I guess what that means is you're looking for how to do a follow-up.
Yeah, because I don't want to seem annoying, you know, whenever I call a place and I'm just like, hey, have you looked at my application? Like, you definitely should, dog.
Yeah, I don't think that'll fly too well. So I guess one of the ways of looking at that, one of the things that you could do is I recommend when you do the application, you're probably doing it online, is that correct? Or are you handing in paper applications? I don't think there's too many places that do the paper applications anymore.
They mainly do it online.
Okay. So what you can do is you give it a couple of days and you go up there. And I would recommend going up in person, because if you do it over the phone, that sounds kind of lazy to a potential employer. There's something to be said about going and looking somebody in the eye and giving them a firm, proper handshake that will put you above the rest. So I would recommend going up there, and If it's like a fast food joint, don't go during the dinner rush. Go during the slower times, and ask if you can speak with the manager. Introduce yourself properly and say, you know, hi, my name is Knight Constantino. I recently submitted an application here, and I was wondering if I could check the status of it.
That sounds very professional. Definitely gonna note that down tomorrow.
Yeah. So I would like to check the status of it, or I was hoping to follow up and see if you guys have looked at my application, or you know, something to that effect. But the one thing that I'm going to recommend that you do is rehearse your lines before you go in there. And when I say rehearse them, I don't mean just think about what you're going to say. What I mean is actually sit down in front of the mirror and give your sales pitch to yourself in the mirror. So you're going to talk to yourself in the mirror about, you know, hey, I want to do a follow-up to find out if you've looked at my resume, or, you know, whatever your chosen language is going to be for that. Just as long as it's not, yo, dog, you look at my paper yet? So that generally doesn't work out so well. So make sure that you rehearse that. And then something else, when it comes to the interview, there's a lot of questions out there that people are going to be asked. And if you go, if you just do a Google search and you put down most popular job interview questions, there's a lot of them out there that seem really simple. I mean, for example, the question, if I'm the interviewer, I say to you, okay, Knight, tell me about yourself. What do you say?
I usually just say, I do that corny thing where I'm a hard worker. Like you just said, like, take it as a grain of salt.
Mm-hmm. So here's one of the things. If you know that question is coming and you have something prepared beforehand and you have rehearsed it, you've rehearsed it like it's a performance, and at the end of this performance, a standing ovation is going to be a job offer, you're going to be a lot better off on there. Now, something to consider when you're asked that question, you know, do they want to know about you as personally, professionally? And, you know, you can ask them what they want and give them a brief summary on either one. But anyway, we'll be back.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Ever struggle for the right thing to say at a party? Want something to break the ice? Get the free Freedom Fiends Android app, Pocket Alibi. Pocket Alibi will help you have things to say. It'll replace verbal communication when you're not speaking with somebody.
I value your input.
It'll make you the hit of any party.
Not my circus, not my monkeys.
Will it work?
Not a guarantee.
It's a great icebreaker, too. Comes loaded with hundreds of original funny sayings with great voices and great recording quality. It's arranged into 7 categories. Disclaimers.
You should never do the thing I'm talking about.
Excuses.
I'm sorry, sir. An older girl told me to do it.
Advice. Fun, too.
Get off me, kitty.
Libertarian pickup lines.
Hey, baby, hold my camera while I yell at this meter maid.
State speech is hate speech.
Bark, bark for the state.
Get Pocket Alibi today on Google Play for free. Again, search for Pocket Alibi. That's Pocket Alibi, A-L-I-B-I.
Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi.
Does this app make me look fat?
Meow. Freedom Fiends. This is Lou, and I'm joined by Knight. And we're talking about how to get a job. So, during the break, Nathan brought up some interesting points. Nathan is our board op here, and he was talking about how it's important if you're gonna find a position, particularly in food service, if you have a connection through there, like a friend or something like that, make sure that you do that, but get in there and stick with it. Food service is horrible. It's an acquired taste. You have to really enjoy that sort of thing to be able to, you know, really stick it out, but suck it up, stick it out, and get some longevity under your belt. Because if you have a bunch of jobs where you're, you know, bouncing from place to place, there's a lot of expense when it comes to hiring people. And a lot of these companies are trying to avoid that expense of hiring these people, because that money's gone. And if they have to spend all this money to get somebody in the door and they're only there for a short period of time, then they're really taking a beating on it. But at the very least, having that longevity on your resume is going to go quite far. It's going to help out a lot. because a lot of people with these hop around job histories, people don't want to hire them because they don't want to get left high and dry, and that's what they expect to happen out of it. So anyway, going back to the interview, we were talking about different lists of popular interview questions, and some of these lists will talk about how to answer these questions and how to figure out exactly what they're looking for. But the important thing to this is before you go in there, make sure that you have rehearsed this. Make sure that you have done this job interview. Set up a mock interview with a friend or even your mom. I imagine your mom would probably do a pretty good job of interviewing you. So, do a mock interview, practice, and rehearse so that at the end you get that standing ovation, the job offer for your performance. So, let's see. What other advice do we have out there? As far as places that you can apply to, make a list of what your marketable skills are. So I would imagine at age 16, you're probably going to be general labor, maybe some computer geeky stuff, possibly something like that. Make a list of what your skills are, the things that people will pay you to do, and then also make a list of the places that you can apply to that will pay you to do those things. And a lot of people, they don't really think about it, but example, if you're looking for restaurants, go to the Yellow Pages or go to a website that lists all the restaurants in your area and you start making a list of what's what and places that you can go to, and then keep track of where you apply to. If you go in there and talk to somebody, make sure you get the person's name and jot that down so that when you do a follow-up call or when you do a follow-up visit, you can ask for that person by name. And then one of the other things after an interview, this is something that will really go far. Get the contact information of the person that you interview with and drop a thank you note or card or email to the person that you interviewed with after your interview. The main thing that will accomplish is your name will stick out even more than it did based upon your performance. And when they see a thank you card from somebody, they're like, wow, this person really cares. This person's kind of proper. This person is actually trying to make a good impression. And I've had situations where I applied for a job and it turned out that I didn't have the qualifications that they were looking for, but because I had dropped a thank you note in there, I was referred to somebody else and I did get the job offer from that place.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like a lot of what comes into play is effort and also execution of the effort, but overall it's how much you put into it and how much you try to make your name stick out. But I'm assuming there is a point where you can overdo it.
Oh yeah, where you get to the point of being too good to be true.
Yeah.
So do we got music? I can kind of hear something in the background. Okay, yep, that's music. All right, we'll be back second hour, and we'll get back to the regular Freedom Fiends format of complaining about government.
My favorite.
Worms.
Worms.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is Michael W. Dean's novel from the year 2000. It's entirely fictional.
Allegedly.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is a glorious story about a low-rent post-punk rock star, Cash Newman. Cash Newman is entirely made up.
Not a guarantee.
And is not based on any particular person.
Not a guarantee.
Cash Newman has lots of fun with strange ladies and with the party favors.
Don't try this at home.
And he hangs out with people who commit 3 felonies a page.
But that's none of my business.
It's all in good fun. And at the same time, it's kind of deep. But always spunky. Michael recently updated the book to a much better version. He released it as a paperback and for the first time on Kindle. As with this and all Freedom Fiends related things, please rate and review. Get Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women now on Amazon or at michaelwdean.com.
for entertainment purposes only.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. And something interesting to go along with that intro. Just a couple of days ago, the Freedom Fiends reached the time on terrestrial radio that was necessary for the radio signals to reach all the way to the possibly habited or inhabited area of Alpha Centauri. So our alien overlords may have heard our signal, and they're ready to come back and save us from the state. So anyway, the state that we need to be, that we need them to save us from, is going to involve a bunch of goons. So yeah, we're going to go back on the cop bashing kick here. So anyway, this first article comes to us from Reason Magazine, and this is July 24th, 2017. So it's recent. Crooked cops need tighter restrictions, not financial incentives to invent crimes. And it starts off talking about, I'm pretty sure I covered this last week. In January, a Baltimore police officer planted drug evidence before activating his body camera and finding the probable cause he and his buddies needed to make a bust, according to the city's Office of the Public Defender. Images of the cop placing a soup can full of white capsules on the ground were captured in the 30-second buffer of the camera and then preserved after the device was officially turned on. Now prosecutors are reviewing 100 other cases in which the same trio of officers may have been up to similar shenanigans. Most news reports treating the incident as a peek at problems in troubled Baltimore's police department, not just Baltimore, they need to look a little further afield. These Baltimore officers and their colleagues around the country are the same cops that the U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions thinks are burdened with excessive oversight. Oh, we can't have watchers watching the watchers now, can we? In April, he vowed the Department of Justice will not sign consent decrees that will cost more lives by handcuffing the police instead of criminals. Yeah, because heaven forbid the police obey the laws that they're supposed to be enforcing. But anyway, whatever. And just days ago, Sessions rededicated his department to working with local law enforcement on civil asset forfeiture efforts that bypass the need for criminal convictions to seize property and also bypass state and local safeguards. So, you know, just out of curiosity, if they don't need a trial to seize people's money, why do they need a trial before they put them in jail? Why not just lock them up? If the cops arrested them, they must be guilty, right? With the exception of this particular case of the Baltimore cops planting evidence and happening all these other times. But anyway, whatever. So forfeited funds are split between federal and local agencies in a lucrative arrangement for everybody but the victims. Equitable sharing, which is like a euphemism for government redistribution of wealth to government, collaboration between federal and local agencies was suspended under former Attorney General Eric Holder, but the new regime is jump-starting the program. Yes, Sessions promised that the federal government will not adopt seized property unless the state or local agency involved provides information demonstrating that the seizure was justified by probable cause. But that is cold comfort if that probable cause from eager cops planting bags of drugs hither and yon. The evidence, not planted, suggests that that police officers don't need more incentive to falsify reasons for slapping on the cuffs. Day-to-day pressures to meet arrest quotas, outdo colleagues, or spackle over errors in judgment seem to have already done the job in spades. Michael Slager, a North Charleston, South Carolina police officer, faced accusations he planted a taser found near the body of Walter Scott, the man he killed after a traffic stop. I saw that video. Yeah, it definitely looks like he planted it. Slayer claims Scott wrestled the taser from him and then brandished it as a weapon, but video showed Slayer picking up the device from a good distance away and moving it closer to the dead man's body. After a mistrial in his trial for murder, Slayer pleaded guilty to violating Scott's civil rights. Oh, man. In 2014, two Los Angeles sheriff's deputies were charged with planting guns at a marijuana dispensary to justify arrests and heavy prosecutions for employees of the business. Further investigation revealed that two were members of a police gang that described themselves in a pamphlet as alpha dogs who think and act like the wolf but never become the wolf. Bro, you're the wolf. They competed among each other for status and seemed to plant guns as a routine tactic. And it just lists all these different things on here, you know, different similar situations of cops engaged in scumbaggery of planting evidence and manufacturing evidence, all for the purposes of getting the arrest numbers up and everything else. Yeah, these folks all need more incentive to dig into the tackle box for some of that instant probable cause and less oversight while they do so. Of course, every year police and prosecutors across the country, the United States, take hundreds of millions of dollars in cash, cars, homes, and other property, regardless of the owner's guilt or innocence, notes the Institute for Justice's justice with regard to civil asset forfeiture of the sort that Jeff Sessions has now revived as a joint federal-local project. Do you think that's enough of a lure for the likes of go-getter cops and crooked judges who haven't shown much restraint about fabricating crimes? Not that federal oversight is a guarantee of anything. It wasn't so many years ago that legal commentators were trying to calculate just how many thousands of criminal cases the FBI tainted with bogus crime lab results tailored to help prosecutors. In 2014, the Justice Department's Inspector General again reported on serious irregularities in the lab's management, that means shenanigans, and cited the execution of a defendant despite a review that found the FBI lab analysis to be scientifically unsupportable and the testimony overstated and incorrect, meaning they killed an innocent man because of lies. It's possible that the feds may not be in much of a position to provide moral guidance. And the latest incident in Baltimore is just one more argument that loosening the reins on law enforcement and providing the morally flawed officials of the criminal justice system financial incentives to find evidence is a terrible idea. So, now you had mentioned something right before we came back on there, and please repeat that, something that you got from this article.
It just seems like, to meet their quotas, they're acting on the vulnerability of the overall views on different situations in this country, like the marijuana dispensary. That's a very touchy subject, you know, because there are people who hate it. And there's actually a very large percentage of people who hate the idea of dispensaries. And basically, if you plant guns there, you could just meet your quota and walk away scot-free because they're probably not going to question it.
And get rid of those dispensaries while you're at it.
Yeah.
So with the people that don't like the idea of dispensaries, with the people that have something against it, or the idea that people can alter their state of consciousness legally by smoking instead of drinking something, what do you think the motivation is for that? Have you run into these people that think it's horrible and other stuff? Where does this come from?
I think it comes from mainly just stories that are told growing up. You know, in the school system, we're taught that drugs are bad, and they give us all of these false stories about, you know, people overdosing on weed. and they have this mentality to where, like, yeah, I'm not going to support that because it does this, this, and this to you, but they're not going to actually go out of their way and really look at the statistics and all of these benefits that come to people with cancer and all of these other diseases that take pain away and just make life at least a little more livable, and every human deserves that. But these people have been just brainwashed because of, you know, the public school system. But luckily for me, my mom, she actually was correcting me because, you know, I'd go home, tell her what I learned like every other kid, and then she would correct me and kind of show me a different point of view. And I really appreciate that. Nice. And yeah, it shaped me into a better person.
What are some of the lies? Can you give specific lies that they gave you in school? And was this like through the drug or the DARE program or what was it? Or was it just like general indoctrination?
Just general indoctrination. Like in our science class, we had a textbook and it talked about drugs and the quote unquote effects of marijuana and how it just makes your body feel worse and how you'll have withdrawals. And then I actually went to my friend's Boy Scout meeting because he was like, oh, it'll be fun. It'll be fun. It was not. He lied. And basically, they had this table.
It had worse effect. Did the Boy Scouts have worse effects on you than marijuana?
Oh, most definitely. My body felt sluggish and my brain was just mush. They had this like party table and it was filled with pamphlets and it was just filled with all of these lies about marijuana and these fake percentages and statistics. And it I could tell that they just made it up, like, oh, 60% of people who get who smoke marijuana get cancer. Like, I could tell they were just trying to use scare tactics to put fear into these kids. And it's just not cool because these kids are vulnerable. Their minds are definitely just... they're so easy to take advantage of, to put to your own agenda.
Hmm. So how many of these things did you recognize as being lies right up front?
At the Boy Scout meeting, I recognized pretty much most of them, you know, because my mom would tell me about all that and just put me on the right path.
Meow.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like? Then this free ebook may save your life. Rats is your guide to protecting yourself against snitches, informers, informants, agents provocateur, narcs, finks, and similar vermin. Rats was written by OG libertarian Claire Wolf. Rats is a short book, easy to read, and available free in many formats. Download Rats free at rats-nosnitch.com. That's rats-nosnitch.com.
We are back. This is Lou, and I'm joined by Nate. This is Freedom Fiends. So, interestingly enough, one of the propaganda pieces that was thrown at me, and this came from my own mother, she basically just threw the nonsense at me, tried to scare me away from it, and really didn't think it out very well. She had told me that if I smoke pot, that I had to wait until I learned everything that I wanted to know in this world because I would never be able to learn a single thing after that. The only thing that I would ever know was what I knew right up until the moment that I took that first puff because it would have such an impact on my mind that I would never be able to learn a single new thing again. So what do you think happened when I saw kids that I went to school with that I knew were smoking pot, and then I saw them learning stuff?
You were absolutely confused.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what it came down to was I realized that my mom was BSing me. And, you know, it's actually quite possible that she believed this nonsense herself. I don't know. But the thing is, when you BS somebody, when you tell a lie, even the noble lie, When we tell the lie for the good reasons, it destroys credibility. And it's not just the credibility on that one particular subject, but it's the credibility all around. So when she would make other claims that appeared to be outrageous to me, or if it was something that I didn't know to be true or untrue, I would actually lean towards, it's untrue. Now, I understand that. Yeah, I didn't have a lot of faith in it, because to catch such a lie and figure, well, what else am I being lied to about? You know, why should I pay any attention to this person? In this case, it was my mother. But it doesn't matter, because when you have a lie and you destroy trust like that, it doesn't matter if they're related or not, because you have the lies and you no longer have the trust. And quite frankly, it's not just stuff like that. It's, you know, the lies about, well, it's going to do this to you. You know, you're talking about the statistics and all this other stuff that it sounded like they're making it up on the spot. Now, how can you pay attention to the government as a source when it has all these different lies? And it's not just lies about this. It's lies about everything. It's almost as if even when the truth would serve it more, the people in government will lie. Just out of habit, just out of a compulsion, just because of an inability to tell the truth. So another lie is, and I'm surprised I didn't see it in this article, because the recent article that we just read, the title of it, once again, being crooked cops need tighter restrictions, not financial incentives to invent crimes. This whole idea of reform, and this is something that's indoctrinated in the school system. Oh, well, things aren't working right, so let's just reform it. And there's another article here that we have, and this comes from a Facebook friend of mine that I've never met, never spoken to, but I like the guy. He's a pretty good writer. He's a reformer, and I'm an abolitionist, so we disagree in that regard. But his article was put in HuffPost. His name is Tom Mullen, and it's a practical solution. Run police departments like fire departments. Let's hear what he has to say before I talk about why I disagree with it. Do you lie awake at night in constant fear a fire will break out and nothing will be done to put it out? For the 99% of the population not suffering from pyrophobia or a similar neurosis, the answer to that question is no. Even though firefighters aren't patrolling the streets in their big red trucks, they still manage to arrive at the scene of a fire within minutes of an emergency call. Actually, in most cases, they arrive in time to save the chimney. But anyway, why can't police departments be run the same way? If they were, Walter Scott, Freddie Gray, and Sandra Bland would be alive today. All three encountered police doing what would be considered outlandish for any other institution charged with public safety. Roaming the streets looking for trouble. No one had called 911 asking for protection from Scott, Gray, or Bland. No judges had issued warrants for their arrest. All three were, at least at the time of their arrest, just walking or driving down the street, minding their own business. But we'll be back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Freedom Fiends. This is Lou, joined by Knight. And we're talking about police reforms and why they don't work. And this article here is from a fellow. His name is Tom Mullen. It's in HuffPost. And his solution is run police departments like fire departments. And now, although I disagree with his solution, he does make some very, very solid points here. When he talks about, had it not been for officers being out on patrol and actively looking for trouble, a number of people would still be alive today. As a matter of fact, a lot of things would not have happened. And quite frankly, if it wasn't for the fact that police cannot be a agency of service and protection to the general public, only they can only serve and protect the politicians. If it wasn't for that fact, I could endorse this idea of his. So there's been a lot of digital ink and warm air expended on whether these victims of tragedy were treated differently because of their race. There are compelling arguments on both sides of that question, but no practical solutions offered by anyone. At the end of these discussions, there is invariably some vague reference to more training or bland platitudes. Everyone knows nothing will change. And you know what? The common phrase that we hear with this, and it doesn't matter what it was. And when I was early on my path to libertarianism, and I was still more big L libertarian than libertarian philosophy. I was more politically libertarian than philosophically libertarian. I remember seeing an article, and it was about that Dr. Kermit Gosnell, the abortion provider, who had complaints in multiple states and everything. And there was some really horrible stuff going on there. And I remember reading a quote from somebody on the grand jury that says, "We don't know what the answer is, but we definitely need more regulation." And if we go by the title of the previous article from Reason, where it says crooked cops need tighter restrictions, usually this horrible stuff is a call for reform, is a call for more regulation and everything, and that doesn't work. If you look at modern day police today, as we know them, the NYPD, LAPD, the Bear Saskatchewan PD, police departments as they exist today have only been in America since the mid 1800s, so the 1850s. And before that, there was law enforcement. There were constables, sheriffs, redcoats before that. But the police department as we know it today has only been around since the mid 1800s. And England, it came in at the end of the 1700s, like shortly after the American Revolution or the War for American Independence, whatever you want to call it. If you look at what has been going on from the origins of the police and the movie Gangs of New York is actually a story that is based upon a book by the same name, not a novel, but an actual book. And it talks about how the police in New York City at that time were actually gangs. They were gangs that were hired by the politicians to be their muscle. And back then you didn't have the 12.5-year indoctrination program called government schools that let people know, you know, or that told people that it was the opposite of what it is. I mean, everybody knew back then that it was a gang and it was the government's gang. Now you got thin blue lines and other nonsense there. But if you look at the history of policing and everything that's happened over all these years, what you see today is a result of a little over 150 years of police reforms. And as Leonard Reed puts it, the constant need for reform is proof positive, or it's an implicit admission that the status never got it right the first time or any of the following times afterwards. That's what reform is. But anyway, going back to the article here, I'm going to suggest a solution that will sound radical, even in a country that styles itself the land of the free. Let's get cops off the streets unless responding to a 911 call or serving a warrant issued by a judge. Everyone would be freer and safer, including the police officers themselves. This is by no means an anti-cop argument. No, Tom doesn't do that. I do. The problem isn't how they do their jobs. It's the job we ask them to do. A free society shouldn't be asking armed agents of the state to patrol the streets, keeping its citizens under 24/7 surveillance. I agree. I haven't seen many surveys, but I have a feeling that if you ask cops at random why they joined the force, very few would say it was to protect the public from broken taillights or untaxed cigarettes. The men and women we want on this job to, the men and women we want on this job join to protect the public from real crimes like murder, assault, rape, and robbery. I think it's probably more than he's willing to admit, but anyway, here's the catch. You can't have a free society where this protection occurs in advance. The federal and every state constitution assumes the government can't and shouldn't do anything to prevent a crime. The Fourth and Fifth Amendments were written to keep the government from even trying. They assume the government is powerless until a crime has already occurred. The Fourth in particular providing further restraint on how the government investigates the fact. Defending oneself while a crime is occurring is left to the citizen is not a responsibility of the police. Even the Supreme Court agrees, because the Supreme Court has ruled on numerous occasions that the police have no duty to protect the general public. Protecting oneself is what the Second Amendment is all about. The job we ask police to do today annihilates the principle of the Fourth Amendment. Regardless of statutes and Supreme Court rulings, police surveilling all of society all of the time is as unreasonable a search as there ever was. Only decades of becoming accustomed to the idea allows us to see it any other way. It hasn't always been this way. The modern police department, as we know, is a product of the 20th century. Prior to that, peace officers were generally dispatched in response to a complaint by the victim of a real crime, usually with a warrant. Contrary to legend, this did not lead to chaos, even in the inappropriately named Wild West. He's partially correct on that, but meaning there wasn't chaos. And the not-so-wild Wild West was actually kind of a snooze fest. But anyway, we don't need police officers out patrolling the streets. Fire departments have proven we can achieve emergency response in minutes without that. You know what? Maybe cops would be able to achieve their emergency response time and lower that response time if they weren't so busy revenue generating. But anyway, there's no reason police departments can't operate the same way. Would life under these circumstances be significantly less safe? No. The laws that might go unenforced are largely those that shouldn't exist anyway. Yes, more people might get away with driving 65 miles per hour in a 55, but people would be free to call the police if a reckless driver were truly threatening public safety. The same goes for thousands of other victimless crimes currently enforced by police. Now, it's interesting, because there's numerous studies out there that show that the traffic laws don't actually improve safety. They actually make things less safe. If you look at the war on drugs, a.k.a. no cartel or police agency left behind, that creates problems that would not exist without this prohibition and does not solve the problems that it claims that it will solve. You take the violence of the illicit markets as a prime example, and it doesn't matter if it's the modern drug trade, the alcohol prohibition of the early 20th century, or just the ban on markets and selling in the Soviet Union and the Eastern Bloc countries, because you had violence around the black and gray markets there too. And by gray markets, I don't mean, you know, stolen goods and stuff like that. I'm talking about basic survival staples like food, like medicine, and even consumer electronics, you know, just general consumer goods. You had violence around these rackets because of the illicit market. So it's government intervention that causes violence, not drugs and alcohol. But anyway, Black Lives Matter, all lives matter, freedom matters too. It's the founding principle of our nation. We need to get back to organizing society around it. No, that's where you're wrong. When you try to organize society, you get people like Jeff Sessions who think that they can organize society and they will spare no amount of violence to organize the living daylights out of anybody that looks at them cross-eyed and doesn't bow down with complete obedience. Redefining the role of the police would be a great place to start. Let's restrict their interactions with the public to serving warrants and answering emergency calls. We'd all be freer and safer, and cops could do the job they joined the force to do. What are your thoughts on this, Knight?
I just think it's funny that there's so much talk in this article about freedom this and freedom that. And I guess, yeah, he... there were good points made in that article, but there are so many different instances of kids being brought up in the U.S. in, you know, the land of the free, but we're taught to basically bring our knee to any authoritative figure, anyone who is above us, especially the police. And I don't feel safe around cops anyway. And like you said, the fire department usually shows up just to save the chimney. And it just won't work. It doesn't work either way. And like you're saying, the 150 years of reforming, but nothing is improving. It's actually getting worse. I mean, it was a horrible idea to, you know, start with, you know, government goons. And I actually didn't know that politicians did hire, you know, police as like gangs. I didn't know that. But it only makes sense because they're still doing the same job today, even though they're not being directly hired by politicians.
Chief of police is hired by the politicians, and the job of the chief of police or any command officer and probably any patrol officer is dependent upon the city council members being satisfied with what they're doing. I mean, as an example, if a patrol officer was not writing tickets and not arresting people and fining them for drunk driving and possession of cannabis and all this other stuff, if that cop was going around and investigating politicians for shenanigans and different violations of the law, you know, that cop would be done. That cop would be gone. So yeah, they're dependent upon the city council, the government being happy.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Hi, this is Mark Edge of Free Talk Live. Michael W. Dean's book, User's Manual for the Human Experience, changed my life. In a culture that attempts to turn you into a compliant victim, this book gives you implementable steps on everything from how to be aware of your environment walking down the street to business, to how to handle a toxic person in your life. If you're a human, you need to read this book at least once. Go to Amazon and get the Kindle version, or paperback, or an audiobook of A User's Manual for the Human Experience.
Freedom Fiends.
Freedom Fiends.
Yo. Redemption in the third act. So I don't know how much redemption it's going to be. I think it's going to be more medicine than redemption. And by medicine, I mean a lot of people aren't going to like the taste of it, but they're going to need to take. And we just did a couple of articles here. And one of the common refrains when something happens, especially in government, is we need more regulation. We need more reform. And quite frankly, no, that's not the case. And the reason for that is there's no amount of government reform or police reform that can turn the police into something that they can never be. And what I mean by that is the job of the cops is to serve and protect the politicians. They are hired by government. They are the enforcement wing of government. They are the sharp, pointy, bloody stick or tip of the spear of government. That's what the cops do. When somebody had to go recover fugitive slaves, that was law enforcement. When people had to go out and enforce segregation, that was government. That was cops. When people had to go out and enforce prohibition and create the cartels and or make the mafia families even more powerful than they would have been without prohibition, that was the cops. Any horrible government policy is enforced by the cops. Until the politicians strap on their own body armor and go out and start kicking in doors on their own and locking people up for possession of prohibited vegetation or having a firearm that has a magazine capacity that's beyond the legal freedom limits, until the politicians start doing that, I blame the cops. So the job of the cop is to enforce the law. And by law, I mean the declarations of idiot politicians. I mean the same politicians that have said that segregation should be the law of the land. The same politicians that say, no, your right to keep and bear arms should be infringed. The same politicians that said, oh, you want to treat your medical condition? You want to reduce your pain by using a plant? Go to jail. Go directly to jail. Do not collect $200. I'm talking about as long as cops are enforcing these laws, then absolutely nothing will change. Only thing that you're doing is you're rearranging the bleachers out in the prison yard because you're not changing the fact that it's government cops. So long as they answer to these people that either wish to dominate others, those with these politicians with libido dominandi, or these people that are just wrong about things and have the power to enforce their wrong ideas on everybody else. Until that ends, nothing will change. So my suggestion, quit reforming. Abolish. Abolitionists solve problems. Reformers perpetuate problems, because all reform does is gets the same people to do the same things, but in a slightly different manner. Or quite frankly, the only thing that really changes is their description of how they're doing it, because they're doing the same thing. So as long as prohibition is being done, you're going to have these problems. And by prohibition, I don't just mean drug and alcohol. I mean every single prohibition out there, every violation of freedom prohibition that exists. So until that changes, nothing changes. Cops need to be replaced by 100% private security and protection. As the most recent article talks about, imagine if the cops were out there, or if security and protection was out there looking for threats against your safety. Well, that's not going to happen so long as they answer to politicians. When the customer, the average person, becomes the person who hires and fires their security and protection, that's when the average citizen will have representation in the security and protection industry. So long as until they're paying out of their own pocket instead of going through taxation, instead of having the money taken out and then given out by the government to get these people to go out and generate revenue and lock people up for possession of plants, nothing changes. Worms. Anything to add, Knight?
Nah, you should just drop the mic.
Maybe I will. All right. Well, anyway, thanks for coming on tonight. It was a good show, and you're really coming along well. You're improving quite a bit. Who knows? Maybe I'll be able to take a night off soon.
Maybe.
Yeah, and thanks to everybody for listening. For more Freedom Fiends, go to freedomfiends.com. Worms.
Worms.